With Lent approaching, I thought it would be a good idea to go ahead and present this sermon so that you guys could hear it. I think it's important for all of us to think about some of the topics that showed up in this reflection as Lent approaches. I do need to thank the website workingpreacher.com for helping me towards thinking about some of these topics in a new way as we approach Lent this year. So our scripture reading for the sermon begins in Mark, the 9th chapter, with the 2nd verse, and I'll be reading from the Message today. Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain. His appearance changed from the inside out right before their eyes. His clothes shimmered, glistening white, whiter than any bleach could make them. Elijah, along with Moses, came into view in deep conversation with Jesus. Peter interrupted, "Rabbi, this is a great moment. Let's build three memorials, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." He blurted this out without thinking, stunned as they all were by what they were seeing. Just then, a light radiant cloud enveloped them, and from deep in the cloud a voice, "This is my son, marked by my love. Listen to him." The next minute the disciples were looking around, rubbing their eyes and seeing nothing but Jesus, only Jesus. Coming down the mountain, Jesus swore them to secrecy. He said, "Don't tell a soul what you saw. After the Son of Man rises from the dead, you're free to talk." They puzzled over that, wondering what on earth rising from the dead meant. Transformation, change, adaptation, and growth are at the heart of every story in life. Imagine, if you will, what a story would be like without any change. It'd be pretty boring, right? In the beginning, everything that you see here existed exactly as it is today, and tomorrow will be no different. To me, at least, that kind of certitude carries very little appeal. Now, I'm sure some of you might feel differently about that. You may enjoy the security of knowing for sure what the future holds. I hope that you'll find something of value in these reflections as well, but I think it best if I'm honest with all of you. Certainty isn't high on my list of needs and wants in this life. For me, and again, this may only be for me, it's enough to trust in God's promise of a future where God's community is built here on earth as it is in heaven. So, that is some of how I come to reading today's text. I come with the understanding that change and transformation are not only part of life, they are an essential part of our existence. Transformation is not something to be endured, but rather something to be celebrated. Now, transformation is a common theme for Transfiguration Sunday, the final Sunday before the beginning of Lent, because of how Jesus' appearance was changed on the top of the mountain. However, as I studied and reflected on the text, I noticed something that I hadn't before. The transfiguration marks a distinct change in the relationship between God and Jesus. Do you remember a few weeks back when we read the story of the baptism of Jesus? If you do, you might recall that I emphasized how God's voice speaks directly to Jesus, at least in Mark's gospel. The voice of God lovingly tells Jesus, "You are my son. In you I am well pleased." In essence, God says, "You are my child, and I love you." Now I believe, and I will say this over and over again, that those words are not only directed solely to Jesus. Rather, each and every one of us, by way of our relationship with Jesus, hears them as our own. God says the same thing, "You are my child and I love you," about each and every one of us. "You are my daughter. You are my son. You are my child, and I love you. Now, did you notice that there's a difference in how God's voice speaks in our story today? God doesn't talk to Jesus this time around. He doesn't say, "You are my son." Jesus is still loved by God, but now God says, "This is my son." See, this is no longer a personal affirmation about your status as a beloved child of God. This is a declaration which we are all allowed to overhear. This declaration is meant to transform us, to change us, to usher in a way of life, a way of being, which then ushers in the very presence of God in the midst of a broken and hurting world. All too often, we, like Peter, say, "It's good to be here." In the face of what God is calling us to become, staying where we are, in the safety of the familiar, it could be seductive. And it makes sense, doesn't it? There's a lure to keeping things the same, solid, known. Especially when we see what we have known, those things on which we have relied and in whom we've believed, all crumbling before our very eyes. Whether these disintegrating edifices are our churches, our denominations, our democracy, or our relationships, our communities, our country, too often our only options in response appear to be pop-up tents, quick fixes, provincial vision statements, or nearsighted adaptations, none of which actually trust in a future that God holds. Even for people like me, who like change, there is great comfort in echoing Peter's, "It's good to be here." Because it is. But God is calling us to so much more. The truth of the matter is God's promise to bring healing and redemption, to bring about a community of love and justice, is still true. There is still more to come, and the glory that we have seen thus far pales in comparison. The Transfiguration is no mere demonstration of God's glory. Rather, the Transfiguration insists that God's glory will persist in the midst of and in spite of all that would point to the contrary. The Transfiguration proclaims loudly for all to hear that God will redeem this world. The Transfiguration reveals the power of our present because of God's presence in Jesus, but it also points to the potential of our future. That's what Peter couldn't see, but we can't blame him or think that we could do better because, well, we can't. We constantly and continually try to contain the present. And why? Because we believe falsely that the present is that which can be controlled and therefore our future as well. But that control is an illusion. Sure, we have the power to choose, but my ability to control things ends pretty much at the same place my skin does. The Transfiguration simply must be more than just another story of another miracle in the life of Jesus. We must be transformed by the Transfiguration. If the transfiguration is to mean anything for our lives, it simply has to be that which intrudes on our present, changes our present, transforms our present, and contends that we imagine our future in a different kind of way. A Lenten way. A crucifixion way. A resurrection way. Because any revelation of Jesus' teachings, preaching, pastoral care, or even presence reveals our future and claims our future. And so, are we ready to embrace a new future? Are we ready to have our future claimed by God? One that is not just inhabiting space or intent on constructing places that define and limit, that restrain and monitor, but a future where the grandeur of Moses and Elijah, the sheer grace of God's covenants with God's people explode our expectations. Can we all admit that a transfigured God demands a transfigured believer? And darn it, that's me. A transfigured believer is one who insists that God's glory is not a self-individualized endeavor, but needs to be experienced by all. A transfigured believer is one who insists that those constrained by any form of myopic theologies be freed. And a transfigured believer is one who knows that this is the divine moment that makes getting to the cross possible and crosses over into Lent by holding that to heart. So let us change the questions we ask ourselves. No longer do we ask, will I be transformed by God? This year, let's ask ourselves if we are ready to be transfigured in response to Jesus' transfiguration by undergoing one of our own. Let us ask ourselves, each one of us, am I ready to be a transfigured believer? May that question challenge and sustain us during the 40-day journey of Lent. May God bless.